Okay, we're in the
terminal.
Okay.
They're two of them, and they stayed at the exact same spot the whole time. They're outdoors, like say that.
Oh my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh Jesus, please be a plane. Oh please.
Are you ready for this?
The cameraman said, "What the hell is that?" Midway across the Hudson River was a perfectly circular hit.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like
this. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these are Strange Days Indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of this strangeness. Welcome to program number 387. In the current series. Tonight, Dave Furlott with his take on it, our British correspondent Stuart Miller, and Canadian East Coast contributor Don Ledger. And as usual, Alfred Lemberg will walk us home. And as he says in an email, all righty then, it is time once again to open up a can full of ufological whoop-ass on our brother and sister SDIites. I say unto ye, brethren, loosen your sword in its cold, cold scabbard, brother Errol, and prepare for what for? Yeah, well, we'll consider that one before we read it on the radio, won't we? Victor Vigiani is off tonight and enjoying himself, which is nice. It's a good way to spend Saturday night off. Or either that or on the radio. Either way, it works for me, although I much prefer being here in the host seat. Much to discuss tonight, especially in the light of this week's revelations by Ray Santilli about his supposed alien autopsy footage, which we'll get into in the next couple of hours. Those of you who are not aware of it, do you remember on Fox they had this alien autopsy so-called alien autopsy documentary? Well, there have been gratifying for those who were extremely skeptical about the authenticity of the footage. Words from Ray Santilli this past week. And as I said, we shall discuss that a little later on. Now, you may recall, if you were listening last week, that Victor and I were discussing a UFO documentary that I had grabbed as it went by, and one of the segments on it was, was on Rendlesham, the United States Air Force base over in the United Kingdom, where they flew bombers with nuclear missiles on them, and there were all kinds of strange goings on in the woods, in the forest next to the Air Force base at Rendlesham. And Bentwaters is the name of the Air Force base. Rendlesham Forest has a history going back hundreds of years of much weirdness going on. But Colonel Charles Holt and his men went off into the forest and saw the flying saucer, red eyes staring at them. And Charles Holt had the forethought, or the foresight, to take out his little dictating tape machine and record things as they were going on. It was fascinating. But what was really interesting, and I don't know if the name Lord Admiral Hill Norton is familiar to you. He was chairman of the British Defense Staff for many years. An admiral, a lord, a man who knows what is what as far as defense is concerned. He was interviewed for this documentary that featured the segment on Rendlesham. And this is what Lord Hill Norton had to say.
There are only two conceivable explanations for what happened. Either a UFO landed there, causing the damage and collateral business, or the deputy commander of a United States nuclear-armed air base in Britain and several hundred of his men were hallucinating. Now, I put it to anybody with an atom of common sense, either of those explanations, and they are the only two possible explanations, must be of defense interest. Don't tell me otherwise.
Admiral of the Fleet, Lord Hill Norton, of the British Defense Staff. Anybody with an atom of sense. Yeah, well, there ain't too many people with atoms of sense out there, as far as I can see, as far as UFOs are concerned, and a lot of other things, too. But we won't get into the politics of dancing, will we? Some interesting mountain UFO reports out of British Columbia this past week from Brian Vike of HBCC UFO, Houston, British Columbia UFO Research. Actually, the whole organization is just Brian and his website and his telephone. But boy, does he get a lot of UFO reports. For instance, on March 27th, a witness woke up just after 4 a.m. and saw red lights on buildings and TV towers on the mountains around Coquitlam. At about 4:45 in the morning, he saw what he first thought was a plane flying westbound over Coquitlam at around 2,000 feet. And after looking more closely, he realized it had three non-blinking red lights laid out in a triangular pattern, along with several white strobe lights flashing from various parts of the object. He watched as it flew over Burnaby Mountain, when three large white lights came on just inside each of the red ones. They were facing downward, and he didn't think a plane would have landing lights at the rear. One light in front and two at the rear. White lights, spotlights, shining downward toward the ground. The witness then lost sight of the object. He checked with the Vancouver airport several times, but there was nothing listed as taking off or landing at Vancouver between 1:15 in the morning and 6 in the morning. Strange things going on in the mountains, up the Erie Mountains and down the Rushy Glens. We didn't go a-hunting for fear of little men's. Remember that poem? Didn't you learn that in school? A Vancouver, B.C. witness was looking at photos of the Seymour Grouse Mountain area and noticed a metallic disc-shaped object at about 8,000 feet over Indian Arm in the photograph. He says he scanned it into his computer, but to his surprise could hardly even see the object in the photo. But instead, there is a much larger triangular-shaped object just below and to the left. There are several other objects, including a flying cross above the flying triangle. And in the second picture, he found the same triangle closer to Seymour Mountain. It's funny, he says, that his scanner does not pick it up as easily as seen with the naked eye. If you go to hbccufo.org, there you will find the aforementioned pictures plus a whole bunch of other UFO reports. Brian Vike's website is very busy indeed.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Berlot.
As much as I would hope that this will be the final chapter in the alien autopsy flim-flam, I somehow doubt that it will be. A thread began on the UFO updates list this week entitled Santilli Changes His Autopsy Film Story. Concerns the television program called Eamon Investigates Alien Autopsy. The show had Ray Santilli claiming that he actually saw real film of aliens, and he purchased it from an unnamed U.S. military cameraman. Supposedly, he then went on to say that it took some 2 years to actually complete the transaction, and by the time the film reached him, 95% of it had oxidized. In other words, it basically rusted away. Oh, and the other 5%? Well, that was in pretty poor shape, so being an intrepid producer, he and Gary Shufield decided to reproduce and shoot a replica of what Santilli could remember and what they had on the remaining 5% of film. And he supposedly inserted a few frames of the real thing when they shot this reconstruction. Oh, and the cameraman interview is also a fake. They literally brought someone in off the street to read a prepared script. But needless to say, there's many ufologists saying, see, I told you so in the background, and much of the thread on the UFO updates list deals with those kind of posts. Now, one intrepid poster stated that although this should be the end of the alien autopsy flim-flam, he suspected that now we'll be hearing stories about how Santilli was pressured into saying these things, how the whole thing is real but is being covered up. Well, when I initially read that, I said, nah, never happened. Santilli has sunk his boat and dog paddled home. But don't you just hate when there's a but? Unfortunately, it would appear that he was right. Ed Gehrman, one of the most vocal proponents of the alien autopsy film being genuine, finally posted his comments to the list. And I'm going to quote some of them here. Ed says, I immediately did a frame-by-frame visual analysis of the new AA DVD that Neil Morris has developed. I was looking for any evidence that Ray had faked, hoaxed, or tampered with the footage, or added frames, or that it was a type of restoration, as he now claimed. A restoration or hoaxed presentation can't be accomplished without leaving some clues that this has been attempted. I don't think it's possible to fake something like this and not leave any incriminating evidence behind, no matter what Ray suggests. Okay, a frame-by-frame analysis of a DVD copy of something. Even if it was somehow put together as Ray Santilli now says, there is no way to be able to determine if a copy of something is a faked original. And, Ed, if the film or video or whatever was shot as a complete production, nothing is actually faked or hoaxed or tampered with. It's just a finished production piece. And that little gem paled to what Ed said next. My belief in the authenticity of the AA footage has never depended on Ray's veracity, although I did believe his story of the cameraman and how he acquired the footage, and I still do. Say what? Santilli states that the cameraman was some guy brought in off the street to read a prepared script, and you still believe the cameraman's story? It's not his story. It's a script written by Ray or somebody else. Some of Ed's next statements got me shaking my head. He said, there's still the matter of the crash site that I discovered after following the cameraman's directions. How did Ray ever imagine or restore these directions from the fabric of his imagination? He has never been to Socorro. The evidence existed. The crash site and drawings are evidence. Ed, let's say I talk to someone who has been to the corner of Yonge and Bloor Street in Toronto, but I've never been there, and I look up the directions on this thing called a map. I tell you the directions from the map, and then maybe I add a few details because I've talked to someone. Now, I tell you that the corner of Yonge and Bloor is the secret location for one of our launching sites for Canada's nuclear missiles. Does that mean because you can find your way to Yonge and Bloor from my directions that you actually believe Canada has nuclear missile capabilities? In other words, because you managed to find your way to a location on a map, that place has to be the crash site? Come on. Enough is enough. Ray Santilli himself admits that the alien autopsy film is something that he produced. The alien isn't real. The autopsy isn't real. And even some of the props aren't real. I don't know about the rest of the world, but up here in Canada, when something isn't real, it's a fake. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange Days, indeed.
Yeah, and if you believe that, I've got a bridge I can sell you real cheap. Yeah, you and I have both snickered at the alien autopsy film for the last years. And there are several people who've invested several years of their lives in hanging on to the belief that the alien autopsy film footage was real.
Oh, yeah. It's sad. It's unfortunate. And the thing is, they refuse to look at any of the other evidence that's been produced time and time and time again to say, guys, no, it's not real.
Yeah. And here we are. Finally, Santilli has fessed up.
Yeah.
I just have the feeling that probably after tomorrow or Monday, there will not be any more discussion about the alien autopsy film on the UFO updates list. Because, frankly, I'm bored. I've been bored with it for years, you know.
Well, we beat this horse to death.
Oh, yes. I bet you there must be, what, 800, 1,000 posts about the alien autopsy over the years on the UFO updates email list?
At least.
Just for the listeners who are grabbing us for the first time and happen to be connected, if you go to virtuallystrange.net and click UFO updates, there are almost 64,000 messages archived there over the last 10, 11 years. If you read through it all, we'll send you a mail-in PhD.
Matter of fact, if you read through it all, give us a call and talk to us.
But please don't gibber at us, okay? It's quite an amazing archive.
It's not just old news. There's a lot of stuff that's in there that comes up that's all current as of the date, which means that everybody who's saying that there's nothing to UFOs, that they're going away, guess what? It's still there. There's still new stuff coming out.
That's Dave Ferlot, ladies and gentlemen, contributes his take every Saturday night on this program. Dave has a new book out there. You should, again, go to virtuallystrange.net, click Strange Days Indeed. Click Dave's picture down on the left-hand side there toward the top of the page, and that will take you to a description of Dave and his book and his dog and... and all the money he's making out of this. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next Saturday night.
For sure.
And let's try and avoid Santilli this time.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Santilli, lace, and the pretty face. Good night, Dave. And joining us is our British correspondent, Stuart Miller. He joins us from his home in Northern England in Cheshire. Good evening, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Oh, yes, of course. Good morning, sir.
Just a reminder.
Yeah, sorry about that. You know what we colonials are like. We get very forgetful sometimes.
I'm glad you said that, not me.
Well, we have to be humile. We have to tug our fetlocks and make knees.
No, you don't. They'll kick us out.
Very well, then.
Shouldn't say that, should I, really?
No. People understand. The people who do UFO radio programs are pretty damn peculiar. What an interesting breaking story this week, Stuart Miller.
I need to ask, Errol, do you pay expenses for this program?
Do I pay expenses?
I would like to claim approximately $20 off you, please.
Really?
I would, yes, because I forced myself on Thursday evening to go to see the movie.
Oh, the Anton Deck movie.
Indeed.
Ah.
Indeed. I can't tell you how, I mean, it was what they call a preview, which means that it was just on for like two showings or something every evening until it sort of opened properly, I think, yesterday.
Uh-huh.
But let's say that the cinema, you couldn't measure the percentage of volume the audience took up in this cinema. They were so small.
Oh, really?
There was probably 30, 40 people.
And most of those are readers of the UFO updates list.
They all looked like they might be. They all wore anoraks. They all had beards.
Yes. The film we're talking about, of course, is Alien Autopsy. We mentioned it briefly last week that it just opened. Anton Deck were the funny stars of a reality show on British television, and they play Ray Santilli and some other name that I didn't recognize.
Gary Shoefield. I wasn't aware of the name before either. They're a little bit more than that, than as you described them. They've done a number of TV shows, and they're very sort of anonymous and plain-looking and very young-looking for their age, and really there's nothing to them. They're very bland, which is why they're so popular.
Ray Santilli sold his story to someone and they made a feature movie out of it.
Yes, and it's meant to be. We need to make the obvious connection here. It is as a result of the launching of this movie and part of the promotion of the movie that Santilli came out with the stuff about the original AA footage being fake. Because the two are connected. As much as I would like to put this to bed, I think the last thing you can do just at the moment is that, because there is more stuff to come on this show by the bucket load.
Really?
And if you think it's going to be off your updates list next week, I think you're living in a dream world.
Well, I thought I would do is until we get further news and information, let's can the discussion because it's pointless.
Well, for example, one of the things that Philip Mantle, who has been contributing to the debate on UFO updates, has mentioned, and more lately in very roundabout terms, is a legal action, an injunction brought by an unnamed person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Philip Mantle can't comment because he's in the TV program that has had an injunction brought against it, clearly by Ray Santilli. Dave mentioned the TV program that appeared earlier in the week, which was on Sky, which was on satellite. But Channel 5, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe even 3 weeks ago, were also going to run a program on the original AA film, and that got pulled at the last moment. I mean, I actually set the tape for it, and when I went back to the tape, found a completely different program, much to my great irritation. But there's clearly material in that which takes it on a bit further, and there has to be some convoluted reason as to why Mr. Santilli didn't want that program broadcast at that particular point. I expect we'll see it in a couple of weeks or so when the fuss about this film has died down. If anybody is just wondering, should I ever go and see this film, should it make it over to North America, and that is doubtful in the first place, well, the best way I can describe it is to repeat a current theme in many of the critical reviews of the film. It's a comedy and you don't laugh. I think I might have chuckled once or twice, but that's about it. How close or how exact an approximation the actual movie is of the story that Santilli is actually touting around now is, I would say it's probably about 80% of what he's saying. There are some changes. This partner that Santilli had, who originally put up, as I believe, a figure of $100,000.
Volker Spielberg?
Yep. Or Volker, yeah. He's played under another name in the film, Voras, he's known as, and he is a sadomasochistic, gay, drug-dealing thug.
Oh.
I thought the purchase price was $100,000.
It seemed like that.
In the film at $33,000.
Yeah.
Ray Santilli has always been described as a video producer.
Mm-hmm.
In the film, he's portrayed as a seedy little man who pirates videos on a cheap market somewhere in the back of London. The cameraman is named, I couldn't catch the surname, but he's known as Harvey. That role is played actually by Harry Dean Stanton, but he's named as Harvey something or other. There is one fascinating thing about the film, and it's literally the closing scenes.
This is the feature now.
The feature film, yes. On a couple of occasions towards the end of the film, Santilli and Shufield appear as themselves, just sitting there talking to the camera, chuckling about how clever they were with the whole hoax. They attempt at the end of the film to keep the mystery going a bit. And as far as they're concerned, there was a film, but, you know, it disintegrated in the can. But they produce, they show something like about a 30-second stream of film, which again, superficially, looks authentic. But, of course, that is a superficial opinion based on 30 seconds set in a cinema. It would need, obviously, to be looked at a lot more closely.
Well, didn't, what was his name, Handley or Hartley or the special effects guy who claims to have made...
Humphrey.
Humphrey, yeah, the original dummies for Santilli's restoration film. Didn't he say that he had actually worked on some of the dummies for the Anton Deck Alien Autopsy feature movie.
He created the alien that you see in the film. But the point about this little strip of film at the very end is it looks like a 1940s piece of black and white film. It's taking place on a military base. Trucks are rolling in. One truck stops. A stretcher is unloaded and placed on the floor. Cameraman walks up to the stretcher. There's a blanket over the body that's lying on the stretcher, and the blanket is pulled back, and you see an alien. One foot is missing. And, well, that's it, really. I mean, it looked interesting.
Yeah.
It's probably been faked up by the production company that made the film. Probably, but I don't know, and I'd like to look at it again.
Alien Autopsy is what Stuart Miller and I are currently discussing. Fox made a huge deal out of it, made a huge number of bucks, as did Ray Santilli, a British man who claimed that he had found it whilst looking for old Elvis footage in the United States. And 94. 90% of the ufological field looked at the film, the original film footage, what was purported to be original from the 40s, late 40s, and snickered. 10% kind of went for it. And now we're seeing the ripples from Santilli's bombshell this week when he fessed up to the film not being real. It's convoluted, but it's just another sad hoax that just gets in the way of what's really going on and why people like Stuart Miller and myself and many other people are involved in what it is that we do. UFOReview.net is Stuart's online zine. And Stuart also kindly, on a daily basis, sends me links to interesting news stories, the news portions of the UFO updates email list. Have we done Santilli, Stuart Miller?
No, not quite. Just a couple of points.
Okay.
Very quickly. There are still inconsistencies in the story that Ray is putting out. It's a bit bizarre that he doesn't seem to be able to remember where the restoration was filmed. It's also a bit odd that he's not fessing up to where he got the props from. The map directions that Dave was talking about, the crash site that Ed went to, I'm not sure, as I remember what was said at the time, I'm not sure that many of the roads that you had to go down were actually mapped. A lot of them were only accessible by four-wheel drive and hadn't been driven upon or used for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Although Wendy Connors can maybe confirm that because she's been there.
Yes, she has. Yeah, and I don't think it was on her scooter either.
I have visions of Wendy around her neighborhood terrorizing anybody.
Oh, no, there's that woman again.
The other thing I want to say, and I'm going to get a bit grumpy about this, is that in particular, a gentleman by the name of Jason Gammon, who has contributed a number of posts on this subject and one or two others to the updates list over the last week, and I think that he has overstepped the mark a bit with this comment about the pseudoscientists, the AA cultists, should leave the field now that the whole thing has been shown to be a hoax, apparently. There are a lot of pseudo-intellectual, stuck-up, arrogant people on that list, Daryl, I'm sorry to say.
Well, yes, there are.
And at the moment, Mr. Gammon is hovering in that field for me, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, yes, there are a lot of people like that, but then there are a lot of people like that everywhere. I mean, there are a lot of people like that work around this radio station, too, you know? So
I don't believe that for one moment.
That's a little bit of radio humor, basically. But, yeah, you do get a lot of people who are, you know, just... they are who they are, and no matter what age they are, and I have no idea how old Jason Gammon is, he could be 18, 19, he could be 50, 60, it's hard to say.
Well, it's just there's been a lot of posturing and a lot of...
Yeah, but there always is. They'll eventually either settle down or just plain go away. And nobody's going to take that seriously. How many people haven't been taken in by an April Fool's prank?
You know? Oh, I don't know what you mean.
Well, alternative three.
No, that was real.
Okay. That was like Richard Dimbleby doing the spaghetti trees in southern Italy.
You mean spaghetti doesn't grow on trees?
Well, apparently not. Have we done this before? I have a feeling of deja vu all over again here.
No.
Okay.
There is a lady who has a blog. I don't know her name. I think it's Lee, but she posts, or her blog is called UFO Bits.
Mm.
She has just posted once recently on UFO Updates.
Mm.
She put out a blog about a week or so ago, and she titled it, Too Dumb to Post on UFO Updates. I can't figure it out. I know it's very short. I know all kinds of intelligent people post to UFO updates, but for myself, I must be dumb since I can't manage posting to the list and seem to have ticked off the owner a tad. Just noticed.
Who is she?
I think her name is Lee.
Ah. Don't know. Yeah, sorry, don't let me interrupt.
But, well, yeah, she's the lady that brought that came up with the thread about women in ufology.
Ah, yes.
That was her first.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that getting past everything seems to be a bit too much for her.
Yeah, well, it's been a bit too much for actually several people. Several quite bright, intelligent people have just given up in frustration because they don't want to get real email programs, you know?
Did you know that there is a blue ring around Uranus?
I very beg your pardon.
Well, actually, all I've done is take the headline out. I'm not even bothered with the story. Yes. I just love the headline. Apparently, there are blue skies on Uranus. Which I'll just quickly say that.
I don't have any tattoos in that part.
Have you noticed?
Have I noticed?
That an old favorite of ours is back? Rich Reynolds.
Is he back?
Yes, he's been back for about nearly a month now.
Really?
Blogging away. I've got to be honest, I can't see any difference between what he's blogging now and what he used to blog.
Is he blogging on his own, or is it he and his team?
There doesn't appear to be a gang with him. He's blogging on his own.
Good. Because I quite like Rich Reynolds. Some of the other people that blogged along with him I wasn't totally thrilled with, but we won't go there.
Indeed.
Stuart Miller publishes UFO Review. You can get the latest issue either as a PDF file or as a Word file. You can print it out and read it on the way to work and home and back. There's a lot of it. UFOReview.net. Go take a look. Stuart Miller, thank you, sir.
A pleasure.
And let's see what comes out of Santilli's mouth next, shall we? Some interestings this week, a new documentary series on the Discovery Channel. Don Ledger, who is a regular contributor to this program, hasn't seemed to be too happy about this new series, The World's Strangest UFO Stories. Let's head out to Nova Scotia, and Don Ledger joins us. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Errol.
Don is a pilot. He has worked in television production, retired now, and is working his buns off harder than ever, finishing up the old country home that they saved all their pennies for. How's life in the country now, Don?
Oh, it's not too bad. It's been mild weather down here.
Yeah, you were away for a few weeks down into the United States. What were you up to?
Well, I'm typical Canadian. You know, if you can't get the warm weather here, you go south and you find it. I was at the Loughlin conference in Loughlin, the International UFO Congress.
Oh, yes, in Loughlin, Nevada, yes.
Yeah, right. Hmm. I guess you can't have vacation when you're retired. I don't know. This doesn't make any sense, does it?
Well, you can
have to take a trip.
Yeah, you can have a vacation from the cold weather and go to the warm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's what we did. We drove down, drove back. We went through the American Southwest, you know, right across most of the, well, pretty much all of them, I guess.
Hmm.
And what they call the desert areas, or the southwestern U.S., you know, through Texas and northern Texas and Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, and actually even got over into Los Angeles. Not that that's a desert, but yeah, I met some of the people down in that area. Well, I met a lot of people at the conference, of course.
Yes.
And had a really good time, actually. Did a few interviews and a couple of small segments, probably that'll show up in the documentary later on. You never know where these things are going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I missed some of them. I missed Skinwalker.
George Knapp and
Brother George there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and
not my brother George. I don't think I think he's from the Teutonic Knaps.
Yeah.
Rather than from the Chippers of Flint from the east coast of England. Yeah.
Yeah.
Knappers were Chippers of Flint. That's, you know.
Is that right?
Back in the old days,
that's
yeah.
Where it comes from. Apparently we made stone, the ledgers.
The ledgers, yeah, exactly.
The stone they used to put over the grave, that was called a ledger stone.
Hooray for the Doomsday Book and King John, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave Jacobs and Bud Hopkins were there, Peter Robbins. I hate starting to mention who was there and who I enjoyed, because in case you leave somebody out, somebody will get insulted.
Yeah, and they all listen to this program, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's true. I can forget names real easy because I'm terrible at them.
Well, me too. And it's terrible when the better half isn't there who remembers everything.
Yeah. Well, some of the best parts are when you're sitting down just having friendly chat.
Well, yeah, that's always the best part.
I'd go in and pick up on what I wanted to pick up on, and then I'd move around and talk to people, you know, and see if I can generate any new information, and, you know, in the areas I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a fairly comprehensive book room they have there where there's some people are selling books and so on. Tapes, well, you know, DVD are the big thing. You mentioned Wendy Connors.
Yes.
I visited with Wendy on my way back, going through Albuquerque. And I just love that name. Probably because from the Bugs Bunny show. And I don't want to insult anybody there, but it took me a long time to work that one into a conversation so that I could actually say we took a wrong turn at Albuquerque, which we did on one occasion. Just in country there, and I did have a chance to fly over Kirtland Air Force Base, which, you know.
Ooh, I bet that was a thrill.
Yeah, didn't look any more unusual than any of the other bases I've seen. It's the way they're supposed to be, I guess.
Yeah, and you didn't see anything in the skies while you were down there?
Not a thing. My wife and I went up from Loglands, 90 miles north of Las Vegas, so we had to do Vegas, went to Bellagio and so on. I was looking for a poker game, hoping I could get on the World Poker Tour or something, but didn't happen. We drove back late at night, about 11 in the evening, down, I think it's Highway 93 South, once you eventually get out of Las Vegas and you're heading back down to Loglands. Now, this is a highway at night when you're looking in the distance and you see car headlights. It could be 15 minutes before they actually pass you when they're coming on the other lane.
Yeah.
While we're driving along, it was a nice starry night. It was really quiet, and it was only us on our side of the road. And you're motoring along there at a specified speed limit, which I won't mention. And you're almost like you're floating.
Yes.
The car we had was new. That was actually a very nice experience coming through there, and we didn't see anything that night, but I could see how people could start generating some of these things. So clear, there's nothing from horizon to horizon there, and you're going in a straight line for about 25 or 30 minutes. And then every once in a while a car will pass you coming the other direction or something.
Did you stop and look at the stars? They must have been unbelievably clear there.
It is. I did pull over and had a look at the sky, and of course my wife didn't want me to get hit by any of the oncoming traffic, but you can see them coming for like 10 or 15 miles, so that was a problem.
Yes.
But nothing, not a thing. When you're looking for them, you can never see them.
Yeah, well, ain't that always the way it is? It's when you see them out of the corner of your eye, and then you snap your head around, and they're gone.
Yeah.
Don, you came back to find a new documentary series on the Discovery Channel this past week.
Yeah, The Strangest UFOs. The first two I watched, I really found a bit unbelievable. They were pretty hard to watch. Let's first say it at the very first. You know, I've been involved in documentaries myself. I don't know how many, and I've lost count.
Mm-hmm.
And so have many of the other people that, you know, you and I know. And you go into these things sort of wide-eyed and innocent, thinking you're just going to tell your story, and you're going to be treated with some respect. And normally you are. But there's the odd one you do that where they take it, and once they get it into post or into the edit suite, no matter what comes out of your mouth, it can be made to look ridiculous or, you know, or taken out of context or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular instance, the two that I did see, the third one came on last night on Discovery, which was to do with Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you see it?
I grabbed it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I grabbed it too, but I also saw it because, you know, because I made a point because we were going to be talking about it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But not particularly this one, but the first two. The first one was some people who've seen it, and I would imagine it's only being shown in Canada, was the, I don't know the actual title of it because I only got maybe 5 minutes into it and I was so disgusted with it I couldn't watch it anymore. But it had to do with aliens controlling government and so on.
Are aliens ruling the world?
Aliens ruling the world, yeah. Real, you know, outright nonsense as far as I'm concerned, and I think it reflects back on us, you know, as UFO researchers. The second one was to do, had Stanton Friedman in it, was sex with aliens.
Well, and Stan is an expert on that.
Yeah.
As is, I might add, Seth Shostak, too.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, who's also an expert on alien life on other planets.
Yeah, well, apparently.
Well, I've never seen him show up in any of the Nova or Alien Planet, as a matter of fact, that shows up on Discovery Channel on Daily Planet, which is a...
Yeah, in fact, that ran this week, Alien Planet.
Yeah, it's a two-hour thing. It's been on a couple of times.
It's pretty good.
It's really interesting.
Yes.
You know, and they've got people in there who know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, it was the second one that I watched partially, and it was to do with Betty and Barney Hill. And whenever they brought up, you know, mention of Betty and Barney. Betty particularly was, I understand, experimented on, but I don't think she had sex with aliens as far as I can remember.
Mm.
But they would inject that in to the commentary or the voiceover. And then whenever they showed Stan, I don't think he's as much of an expert on it as others, but the camera shots, the angles, the music, they're using this music like you would see in an old 1953 or 54 horror movie.
Yeah, the theremin.
The theremin, that's it.
For the folks who don't know what a theremin is, if you remember the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations, and it was used a lot in B-movies about aliens and ghosts back in the 50s.
Yeah, and jump edits and so on.
And the wide-angle lenses that distort people's faces.
Yeah, when they get in close, and particularly it looks like when they're just setting up. We all go through this, we're sitting there, and they're shooting us to get the light right, asking you to count to 10 for the audio and so on. And you're just sort of looking and watching what they're doing. But when they get in really close with the camera, with a wide-angle lens like that, your nose starts to bulge out, you know, and you start to look horse-faced or like a camel or something, and you start looking a little shifty-eyed because your eyes are looking at the camera.
I liked the constant use in the second one of David Jacobs in his one-person elevator. I'm not sure what that was about.
I don't know.
Apparently, that series is produced here in Toronto.
It's produced by Proper in Toronto, yeah. And Mentorn, I think it is, in...
the UK.
Okay. And I have seen a couple of programs, one that came from the UK, British UFO Files. It seemed to use the same type of...
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't wonderful. There was a whole genre of UFO documentaries that had that sort of green look and stretching the picture, distorting it one way and putting all kinds of woo-woo eye candy in the background.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of difficult to come up with new techniques to shoot talking heads.
Well, maybe it is, but they wouldn't do that in a, you know, in any other document. So most of us realize that we're in a field that's, you know, considered off the wall by a lot of people, but making it even more so by, you know, sort of pushing the issue.
The problem is that most of these documentaries are made by people who could give a damn about UFOs,
exactly.
Really,
yeah.
And it's just another meal ticket project for them, and they don't care whether they get it right or not, as long as they get the thing edited, packaged, and delivered. Yeah. On time.
Canada
and
Arts Council pays a lot of money for some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, there's good stuff comes out as well. I mean, I've been involved in four or five...
pretty damn good ones.
Good ones.
And mostly Canadian.
Factual, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're going to do these things. Bring out the right experts. The one they did on Roswell last night, a lot of us don't know which way to go on Roswell. Fella who's on the sane side of this thing, his name is Dave Thomas, for New Mexicans for Science and Reason. His face would keep popping up on the screen, and he'd explain away these things as being, you know, the normal paranoid foolishness that the sane people always come up with.
Dave,
you know,
who?
With mogul balloons and, you know.
Yeah.
And,
you realize, of course, that we've just helped to expand Discovery Channel's audience for the World's Strangest UFO Series.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm open for a check, you know. But I did write to them. I don't expect to ever hear back. And, of course, it's got nothing to do with them. They buy the license for these things up front, but they don't know what they're going to get until they get it. And,
although, you know, a lot of exec producers at networks now tend to have a look at the rough edit stage, you know.
They might, sure. I shouldn't say buy. They said they give a license to the producers.
No, they put up the funding, and then
what they do is they allow that they are going to definitely air this thing and pay out a certain amount of money for it. A lot of it is the television.
Telefilm.
Yeah, and could be Quebec and Ontario, whoever, you know, they all have their grants. They get enough money together and they can make something. And then they make the rest up out of whatever they're going to get from stations going to show it.
Yeah. It would have been much better use of air time to just do something really perceptive and caring and feeling, especially for the abductees. I have to go, Don.
You got to go? Okay,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
See you the next time.
Rest up well, Don.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye now.
Don Ledger, our East Coast correspondent, and always good talking to John. He's been around this field for a very long time, specializes in pilot encounters, pilot sightings. Alfred Lemberg joins us on the line. Evening, Alfred. Mr. Two-Tone Foghorn. That's the feeblest foghorn I ever heard.
Well, actually, it's a legitimate one. I'm not really blowing it the way it should be blown. It was actually used on 19th century ships.
Really? And you have the temerity to bring a foghorn on this program that was actually used in 19th century ships in front of almost 500,000 people and make that crappy sound out of it?
Well, it's British, you know. I don't want to give them any more credit than, you know, like my guy.
What has been going on in your alien view for the last week or so?
Well, first of all, nice job on my email tonight. That was some really inspired reading.
Yeah, I really managed to screw it up, didn't I?
And you mentioned Rendlesham.
Yes.
That you'd seen a program lately that had a good Rendlesham segment, and you'd mentioned that it had been weird for hundreds of years.
Yes.
Can you give the listeners the short and dirty on that?
Yeah, all kinds of strange beings seen in there, witches' covens, ghosts, nocturnal lights, balls of light flying through the trees. I mean, you name it.
Yeah, that's fascinating, and it's a first for me and perhaps for many of the listeners out there. I assumed it was just the affair with the Air Force.
No. Stuff has been going on there since time immemorial. Forever.
It being weird for hundreds of years like that puts an interesting cut on the whole thing that I hadn't heard before. I was wondering, had you heard that or read that from Nick Pope or Mr. Redfern?
No, actually not. Somebody who was subscribed to the UFO Updates email list has family here and emailed me and said he was coming and would it be okay if he stopped by the station one Saturday night? So I said, yeah, sure. And we had him on air and we sat and nattered for an hour. It was great stuff. Chris, I don't remember his last name. And he's probably listening in the UK screaming his name at his computer speakers. But yeah, he sat right across the desk from me here. And we had this interesting discussion about the weirdness that had gone on in Rendlesham Forest for all those hundreds of years.
You know, I'm wondering why some of the other writers haven't picked up on that.
Well, they probably have, but you know what UFO people are like. They wear these leather things around their eyes that they only see in one direction.
Blinders,
yeah. I used to do another program, which was all the rest of the strange stuff.
Uh-huh.
And to my way of thinking, a lot of the stuff that we did on that program sort of ties in kind of neatly with what we do on this program.
Yeah.
But the average UFO researcher doesn't want to know from the paranormal and remote viewing and ghosts and goblins and things
right.
that go
when
bump.
Perhaps maybe they should a little bit more because it's all wrapped up in one big ball.
Of course it is. But, you know, there's still that reluctance. They open their minds to the possibility of UFOs, interdimensional beings or beings from elsewhere in other universes. But there can't be anything going on here
But see, the singularity approaches, the concrescence is coming above the horizon, according to Terence McKenna and Ralph Abraham and one fellow whose name I'm Rupert Sheldrake.
I was going to say Buddy Holly.
Yes, and a few of the crickets, too.
Yes, some chirping crickets.
You know, I was really glad to see towards the end of the program that Don Ledger was going to talk about, well, more things than the alien autopsy, the crash retrieval, and, you know, what was going on, because Don's always fascinating to listen to. Very sincere and sober. He talked about some disparagement on ufology and people looking askance, bad UFO
documentaries.
But I'm glad Don is around to be the antithesis of that, because he's the kind of person that lends the thing credibility and some gravitas, for my money.
There's a few of those kind of people around, you know.
And a few of them on the UFO updates list.
Yes.
The UFO updates list took some hits tonight, you know. Jeez. But there are lots of good people on UFO.
Oh, of course there are. It wasn't the list in general. It was, one or two contributors.
Yes, we're not all fascists. We've been described as such here just recently. Not so much in name, but Mr. Miller mentioned that Rich Reynolds was back, and he's back talking about the UFO mavens, and lately there's been a lot of comparisons with fascism and fascist behavior by some ufologists.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
show me the evidence. Show me the fascist ashtray. Show me the fascist eating strawberry ice cream, you know?
Really? But the mood tonight, you know, the whole mood of the program, especially the first two segments, the alien autopsy and its demise, and there was a mood kind of suggested a little bit by Errol, a little bit by Mr. Miller, that the ufological king is dead, you know.
Or the emperor has no clothes.
Well, yeah, I can appreciate that, too.
Mm.
And there was even one post on the UFO updates talking about some degree of happiness and satisfaction at the fact that the alien autopsy went down in flames. That Phil Glass was compared to James Brown. Of course, you read that one.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how to spell the sound that James Brown made.
Yeah, but him spinning around the cobblestones, you know, and going into splits. You know, I'm saying that, notwithstanding the fact that those splits could even be decisive, you know, and that someone run over to him and throw that little cape on him. His satisfaction is not born of some vindication for his position, which has always been completely denialist and refutatory. And
yeah, for those of you who have just joined us in this half hour, we're talking about the Alien Autopsy film that Fox Television ran the heck out of for a couple of 3 months there. You may recall an alien-looking body on a table and two guys in OR gear supposedly performing an autopsy on this thing that really just was not convincing as an alien at all.
Right. They likely saw theirs with airbrushed genitals. And I have a copy of No Airbrushing.
You're such a lucky man.
Very silly.
Yes. Is that Deliverance country down there?
Very good. Ooh, boy. Oh, ooh. That was right in the kidney.
Yeah, so the man who sold the world, and particularly Fox Television, the Alien Autopsy film footage, came out this week and said that it wasn't the original footage that we were looking at. It was a restoration, which you and I would probably call a fake.
And my point is that nobody should be taking any real satisfaction in that. I mean, let's face it. That alien autopsy thing was dodgy from the start. Everybody knows it. I saw Stanton Friedman on the Larry King show. His eyebrows were hitting the stratosphere over the alien autopsy. And this is, I mean, way back, you know, in the, oh, geez, an entire ufological epoch ago.
Yes, at least 8 years.
So it's in no way a victory that it's dead, gone, and it's over, that it's done. But instead, people should turn their heads to people like Jerry Cohen, and his very sober site that he can find very easily, just Jerry Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, in a search engine, you can find it. But, you know, don't think of alien autopsy. Think of Kirkland Air Force Base, 1957, the Hynek Blue Book case in 1965, the Malmstrom Air Force Base case in 67, Redlands in 68, Exeter in 75, and I can go on and on through Iran and Belgium and Illinois, right on up in the year 2000, and that's just beginning the list of significant others, friends and neighbors.
Yes.
So be not proud. UFOs have not gone away.
Once again, it's the filmmaker who often gets in the way of the work, whether they be a faux filmmaker like Ray Santilli, a faux film producer, or people like the folks that are putting together this series that Don had gotten fairly upset about, called The World's Strangest UFOs, which is a series, and there's going to be more of them. And maybe, fingers, eyes, ears, nose, and toes crossed, the acceptability level for the UFO researchers will start to increase as the series continues. But I have my doubts, and it's kind of gutless of them, actually, you know. As I was saying to Don earlier on, it's bread and butter for them. And it's dirty money, though. They're not telling the facts. Or they're taking the facts and distorting them with wide-angle close-up and fisheye lenses.
The Santilli affair, it struck me while everyone was talking about it tonight, mm-hmm. how well-constructed that whole affair seems to be to throw a wet blanket on any continuing UFO seriousness. And it would appear that we, knowingly or unknowingly, assist or facilitate that process.
Yeah, but, you know, our audiences here in Toronto and in Montreal and then all around both those cities have been listening to this program long enough to realize that alien autopsy is not UFOs.
It's not.
No, it's not. When you
not real UFOs,
well,
ufology.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's really a sideshow, and, you know, we get our silly seasons, too. The opening of a feature film. Santilli is very shrewd. He's made himself several bucketfuls of money out of all of this. And we, in our own...
You've got to be sued for fraud.
I would think so. But then who's going to do that? Who has the bucks to do that?
Well, I'll tell you what. Somebody better not give me $1 million because I will put money up to do
something. Well, we're down to about 58 seconds, Alfred.
Okay, well, how about a short medley of old Frank Sinatra tunes?
I like a nice synthesized version of Strangers in the Night, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I do a Donkey Shane.
Oh, please.
Wayne Newton.
Oh, please. Oh, good night, Alfred. Thank you.
Well, it's not as bad as Vogon poetry.
Oh, yeah. I was just looking at the DVD of the BBC series with as many extras as there are the half-hour episodes. It's wonderful stuff. If you get a chance to get out and pick up the original Hitchhiker's Guide TV series by Douglas Adams. Thank you, Alfred Lemberg.
And auf Wiedersehen, mein Herr.
Ja, gute Nacht. Bonsoir, bon nuit. Sayonara, Yasu, Yasas, and we'll talk to you again next week, Alfred, and Jim Pacheco in Montreal, and Julian McNabb here in Toronto, Eric Mandelker lurking in the background. To all of you, thank you, Don Ledger, thank you, Dave Fumat, and Stuart Miller.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions or comments to sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Strange Days Indeed is the copyright of Random Fit Productions. Join us again next Saturday for more Strange Days Indeed from the Virtually Strange Network. Good night.